Chapter 17. The Power of Conscience. By the time Jarlaxle came walking around the corridor's bend, the fight was over, with his associates the only ones left upright. At least upright and still moving, for a couple of the halflings remained as they had been, perfectly still in the continuing thrall of the priestess's debilitating spell. With a thought, Jarlaxle willed his magical boots to click against the floor, and he sauntered over casually.
"Nice of you to join us," Zaknafane greeted him, though he didn't turn to regard his friend carefully.
He stood flexing the fingers of his hand, which he had bruised against the face of an enemy.
"Well, there was a matron to be dealt with," the mercenary replied.
"And where is—" Zaknafane asked, but bit the question short, seeing the wide-eyed expression of Arathis Hune as the rogue looked past him toward the mercenary leader.
"Far away in another dimension, yet very near," Jarlaxle said, and held forth a small circle of black cloth.
Zaknafane turned and sputtered, snorting even.
"Your hair again?"
And despite the carnage about him, despite his uneasiness with the halfling slaves, despite the blood on his hands and blades, he had to work hard to bite back a laugh. For indeed, Jarlaxle looked ridiculous, with the little spikes of hair now blackened, no doubt from the grease he had used for the sake of vanity, and wafting lines of smoke. It might have been steam from his ears for all the joy Jarlaxle was displaying, though. It was clear that the burns on his head were more than a bit uncomfortable.
"Shut up," he said. "Perhaps the gods are telling you that they don't like your hair," Zaknafane said anyway.
"Shut up. I think you look rather dashing, or at least useful, like a wind-blown torch waiting to be relit." Jarlaxle scowled, and Zaknafane laughed all the harder. Behind him, though, Arathis Hune was not amused.
"Your silly toy won't hold her," he warned. "She will dispel the magic long enough to make her escape."
Jarlaxle looked at him, then at the cloth, then back at Hune. With a shrug, he sent the cloth spinning high into the air behind him, up and up, until it slapped against the ceiling and there stuck, opened. Matron Shiva came tumbling out head first. She flailed and, predictably, went for her house emblem to activate a levitation spell. But Jarlaxle had already acted, drawing a wand and spitting forth a glob of goo, perfectly aimed, that caught the priestess's torso, locking her hands in place. And she fell, head down, nearly 30 feet, to smash against the stone floor. She had protected herself against evocation magic, against fire and cold and lightning, against arrows and bolts, against weapons edged and blunt, but not against falling. Yes, her protection spells absorbed the initial impact, and so her skull didn't shatter. But they were of little use as her neck was bent too quickly to the side, the bone protesting with a sharp, echoing retort. Jarlaxle, Arathis Hune, and the Zalvir warrior who was not writhing on the floor all winced at the sickening sound of Shiva's neck snapping. Not Zaknafane, though, for this was a high priestess of the Spider Queen. Killing her daughter had been satisfying, but this felt even better. He casually walked over to cut Shiva's throat for good measure, though his blade did not sink in. Priestesses and their wards.
"Collect the trophy," Jarlaxle told Zaknafane, as he walked past to look at the wounded and captured Zalvir warriors.
With a shrug, Zaknafane moved over the fallen matron and sent his blade into a circular motion, winding up for the next blow. He stopped, however, and kicked her first to see if she would stir. She did, though with only a gurgle. Good, he thought. He wanted her to know. Around came his blade again, slashing down hard at the dying Shiva, and again her magical defenses flashed and deflected it harmlessly.
"How many do you have, foul priestess?" Zaknafane muttered, his sword coming around again and again, drawing forth and expending more of the wards.
With a force swing, he drew blood across her throat, and so he pressed faster, each revolution cutting a bit deeper. Shiva gurgled again, more than once, and Zaknafane knew that she was feeling the pain, and was realizing the horror that her life was at its end. That made him happy. Some thought Zaknafane to be a drow of conscience and generosity, and indeed for most he was, but not to, never to, matrons of the Spider Queen.
"Put down your hands," he heard Arathis Hune say, and when his next cut took Shiva's head from her neck, he turned about to regard his Bregendierth companion. One of the warriors on the floor had stopped squirming but seemed to be alive. The other, the one Zacnaphane had punched in the face, had rolled to his belly and set his hands as if trying to get up. The third, the one to whom Arathis Hune was speaking, was on his knees, hands presented in the air.
"We're not going to kill you," Arathis Hune went on. "Not now, at least. In fact, there may be an opportunity for you here. You are a houseless rogue now, and a fugitive from Chednasad, and from the new hierarchy of your own house. It would seem like you two, or three if that one lives, have few options. However, I tell you now that Jarlaxle is one of a generous nature."
"To join with him?" the Zavir Drow asked skeptically. "He would trust us?"
"To not trust you would imply that he fears you might do him harm," Zacnaphane interceded, more than a little mockingly. "You cannot."
"Go and tend to your companions," Arathis Hune told the Zavir soldier. The rogue spun about and sheathed one of his blades, but kept the other in hand as he turned to the halflings, several of whom were now beginning to stir as the spells wore off. They saw the murderous rogue coming for them. They had nowhere to run, so they cowered, expecting to die. They cowered tighter when Zacnaphane came sprinting toward them, but he turned short of the group, spinning back on Arathis Hune.
"What are you about?" he demanded.
"What do you mean?" the rogue answered. Zacnaphane drew his blades.
"Seriously, what are you about? Tell me your plan."
"My plan?" an incredulous Arathis Hune echoed. "I'll tell you what isn't my plan. I do not plan to go back to Chednasad. The trophy is for Matron Mother Bayenri, and it is her place, not ours, to inform the Chednasad ruling council of Shiva's fate."
"I agree."
"And I do not plan to spend 7 10 days wandering the corridors of the Underdark with these wretches along."
"So let them go," Zacnaphane posited.
"To kill us while we sleep?"
"You do not believe that."
Arathis Hune snorted derisively. "And you can't believe that letting them walk from this place into the open Underdark would be merciful," he said with a laugh. "I will make their deaths easy, at least." He drew his second blade and came forward.
"No,"
Zacnaphane demanded, stepping between Arathis Hune and the cowering halflings. "Don't be a fool," the assassin chided. "If you allow them to walk from this place, they will wander the dark tunnels helplessly until an almost certainly more horrible death befalls them. You think that preferable?"
"You are not murdering them," said Zacnaphane.
"Who's talking about murder? They are Iblith, nothing more." Zacnaphane just shook his head and held his ground. "Get out of my way, Zacnaphane Doerden." Zacnaphane shook his head. "You serve Bregendierth," Arathis Hune demanded.
"I hunt with Jarlaxle," Zacnaphane corrected. "You are not killing these halflings."
"Unless I kill you first," Arathis Hune finished the thought.
"That is usually how this plays out, yes."
"Then I shall," Arathis Hune promised, and dipped a bow of challenge. And as he lowered, Zacnaphane realized that Hune had rearranged his crossbow on his back and had reloaded it, and now cleverly sprang his trap, pulling a secret cord attached to the trigger of the secured weapon to let fly. As if he practiced this very movement 1,000,000 times before, Zacnaphane dropped to his knees and lifted his sword, held horizontally before him, straight up. The quarrel clipped the blade and flew harmlessly high.
"You can try,"
Zacnaphane said, leaping immediately back to his feet, and just in time, for Arathis Hune had come out of his phony bow with a charge, as if in anticipation that his crossbow trick wouldn't finish off this skilled weapon master. Zacnaphane knew from the drow's expression as they engaged, though, that Arathis Hune had expected some level of wound, or at least to have caught Zacnaphane off balance. But no such luck for the assassin. Zacnaphane was up to meet the charge, if a bit on his heels, his swords out before him in complete balance, turning one strike after another. With a blinding roll and thrust of his blades, Zacnaphane worked himself forward to the balls of his feet, stealing Arathis Hune's momentum, driving the rogue back to even ground. Arathis Hune had never held the title of weapon master, but he could fight like one, surely, and he quickly accepted and countered Zacnaphane's turning of the tables with equal ferocity and speed, their swords becoming a blur of ringing metal between them.
The rogue began working his right-hand blade in short circles, parrying inward. He favored his left hand, Zacnafane realized immediately, and he let the first few parries succeed, moving his own left blade across his body slightly. Zacnafane knew the breakpoint here, knew when his opponent would get both of his swords over to that side far enough to execute a double thrust, or a left-thrust-right slash, or whatever other combination Arathisun had perfected. As the clanging swords neared that point, Zacnafane thought to parry the parry, to throw all his weight behind a counterstrike, to drive his opponent all the way back to the right. Something stopped him, some subtle shift in Arathisun's feet, perhaps, or the look on the rogue's face, or the way his knuckles shifted on his circling sword. Instead of going left, now thinking that to be exactly what Arathisun wanted, Zacnafane stepped back and spun down to his knees, coming fully around with his left blade diving low across to the right, his right blade lifting fast. And just in time, and correctly angled, he knew with relief, when that lifting sword caught not the left-hand blade of Arathisun, but his right sword, coming across suddenly, clearly, in anticipation of Zacnafane's turn. And now, because of the reversal, duck, and spin, hitting nothing but air, then being hit and carried high by the weapon master's upward block, Arathisun had another counter, a clever re-angling of his circling left-hand blade that had it diving under his other extended weapon and also under Zacnafane's block. But that was foreseen by Zacnafane as well, and while his opponent executed it precisely and with blinding speed, and while it certainly would have finished a lesser fighter, it got nowhere near to hitting Zacnafane. Indeed, instead, the speeding weapon got hit, and forcefully by Zacnafane's rising left-hand blade. The block caught the down-angled and thrusting sword, slapping it up against the underside of Zacnafane's blocking right-hand blade. As if that beautiful block weren't enough, Zacnafane went a bit further. With stunning balance and practiced strength, the weapon master locked the top blade firmly in place while he jumped from knees to feet, driving upward with everything but his locked right arm. The suddenness and ferocity of the movement turned the angle of that thrusting sword sharply and too swiftly for Arathisun to adjust, and so Zacnafane's powerful move took the sword right from the rogue's hand. He could have released it, sent it flying and spinning into the air, and such a movement would have freed that rising lower blade for a sudden outward spin and slash at Arathisun's vulnerable right side. The rogue saw it and had already begun a half turn to defend. But Zacnafane didn't release that blade and instead slid his sword up to the hilt, caught it, and brought it rolling down and out with his own blade to become a guided spear flying fast for the rogue's face. Up and across came Arathisun's remaining sword, knocking it aside, but in behind it came the fury of Zacnafane, two swords charging ahead. Arathisun parried once, twice, thrice, backpedaling with each deflection and seemingly on the edge of disaster. "Too easy," Zacnafane silently mouthed, warning himself, and instead of taking the obvious route forward, the weapon master instinctively leaped off to the side. When he landed and turned, he nearly laughed aloud, seeing that the clever rogue had dropped caltrops in his expected path. Undaunted, Arathisun went for his fallen blade, retrieving it just as Zacnafane arrived. "How many more tricks have you to play?" Zacnafane asked, his swords working a brilliant routine of stabs from multiple angles, putting Arathisun on the defensive yet again. His question sounded clearly as a taunt, for by now it was obvious to both that Arathisun could not match Zacnafane sword against sword. "I fight with the tools provided," Arathisun answered, falling into a rhythm of parries to keep Zacnafane's stings aside. "You disappoint," the assassin started to add, but stopped, gulping and leaping desperately, as Zacnafane suddenly fell to one knee, lowering his slashing right-hand weapon. Arathisun tucked his legs and cleared the cut, and got his own right-hand sword down in time to intercept the backhand return slash, then up and across to turn aside Zacnafane's second sword, stabbing for his chest. But now Zacnafane had Arathisun blocking twice with that one blade, and so, necessarily, dropping his left foot back a bit to keep that blade presented. It was an advantage Zacnafane was determined not to relinquish, bearing in, working always to his opponent's right, forcing Arathisun to keep that one foot forward, to keep that one blade doing all the defensive work. Knowing his offhand was being pressed, the rogue responded with a drop turn like Zacnafane had earlier performed, summoning a globe of darkness over himself and Zacnafane as he went. Sacnophane, seeing the first turn of the maneuver right before the light disappeared, didn't hesitate, diving high and forward, pitching a somersault right over the dropping rogue, twisting as he landed to come right in at the kneeling rogue's back. Halfway through that turn, Sacnophane knew he had the kill. He had guessed right, Arathis Yun had dropped, and since the rogue had not gotten any blades up to hinder his dive, the drow was surely helpless. However, just as he landed, the darkness unexpectedly went away. He thought it Arathis Yun's doing, but it didn't matter, because darkness or no, there knelt the rogue, facing the wrong way, working his blades up and behind desperately, futilely. But the rogue hadn't dispelled his darkness globe. Jarlaxle had, and Sacnophane spotted the mercenary leader back at the bend in the tunnel, two wands leveled. Then the mere lack of magical darkness became magical light, brilliant and stinging. Sacnophane growled and pressed on against the painful shine, determined to be done with this. He did note a shimmer in the air ahead of him, just before his stabbing sword hit a barrier, invisible but as solid as a stone wall, and he frowned. He looped his second sword out wider, thinking to come around the magical defense, but there too he hit the same barrier, a wall of nothingness. Arathis Yun, his expression revealing that he believed Jarlaxle had come to his rescue, leaped up and spun about, stabbing hard for Sacnophane's face. But his sword too hit the invisible wall Jarlaxle had placed between them. "You are both stealing from me," Jarlaxle scolded. "That is something I'll not accept."
"Stealing?"
Sacnophane and Arathis Yun answered together, then both looked at each other through the invisible wall and scowled.
"You're each trying to rob me of something valuable by killing the other," said Jarlaxle.
"You don't own," Sacnophane started to protest.
"Out here I do," Jarlaxle was quick to interrupt. "I grant you freedom from your wretched existence in exchange for your loyalty. It is a business arrangement, nothing more. Never forget that."
Sacnophane had never heard Jarlaxle speak to him quite like that before, and he didn't like it, not at all. He glared at the mercenary leader, measuring the distance to Jarlaxle and wondering if he could cover it before the too clever drow played another of his many tricks. "I see no priestess or wizard casting spells to control your minds. So would either of you have any explanation for why my two valued companions are trying hard to become my one valued companion?"
"I brook no murder," Sacnophane said.
"This one is less valuable than you believe," Arathis Yun said at the same time. "He is a fool of the highest order and will bring us great trouble." "It was Sacnophane who went to House Zalvir when we two were caught," Jarlaxle reminded him. "And Sacnophane who would let these slave halflings walk free," Arathis Yun protested, "to stab us in our sleep or to flee to gather allies." Jarlaxle stared hard at Arathis Yun for a few moments, digesting the words, then turned a suspicious stare upon Sacnophane.
"Is this true?"
"I brook no murder," Sacnophane said again.
"Murder?" Arathis Yun scoffed. "They are slaves, Iblith, surface filth. They condemn themselves by coming to the Underdark. We do them a favor by killing them quickly."
"I brook no slavery," said Sacnophane.
"Menzo Berenzon is full of slaves," Arathis Yun protested, but Jarlaxle cut him short with an upraised hand.
"You would murder priestesses," Jarlaxle said, not quite a question.
"The Lothian priestesses are damned by their choice and the consequences of that damnable choice," the weapon master growled.
"Yet you bed one every night," Arathis Yun quipped, and again Jarlaxle stopped him with an upraised hand, adding a stern gaze for good measure. The slight didn't bring a wince to Sacnophane, of course. He wasn't sleeping with any Lothian priestesses out of choice, after all.
"Did not these halflings determine their own fates when they came to the Underdark?" Jarlaxle asked.
"You do not know how they came to this place," said Sacnophane. "What's more likely? They came to a place they almost certainly knew they couldn't survive, or that a slave trader captured them from their village above and dragged them here? They look like no adventuring band that could have traversed so far and so deep."
"Whatever the case, what would you have me do?" Jarlaxle asked Sacnophane. Then he added, "And you," turning to face Arathis Yun.
"Free them," Sacnophane said.
"Kill them," Arathis Yun said at the same time.
Free them to do what? Jarl Axel asked.
Or at least take them to Menzo Berenson and sell them, Arath Issun insisted.
They'll not survive these tunnels, Jarl Axel continued, talking to Zaknafane alone.
Then we take them back to their surface world and there release them.
Jarl Axel snorted, and Arath Issun choked, then laughed outright at the seemingly absurd suggestion.
We have no time for such a detour, Jarl Axel said. We have a trophy to deliver to Matron Mother Bayenri.
We would not be pleased to learn that we freed valuable slaves, Arath Issun added. Slaves Jarl Axel could sell for a tidy profit.
Then I will buy them, said Zaknafane.
This drew a smile from Jarl Axel.
You are an idiot, Arath Issun shouted at him, but Zaknafane didn't even bother to look at the assassin. The drow was talking only because Jarl Axel had prevented Zaknafane from killing him, so his were the words of a ghost at this point.
For my share of this adventure's profits, Zaknafane told Jarl Axel. Give them to me and show me the way to the surface.
Arath Issun started to say something, but Jarl Axel walked over, apparently his invisible magical barrier had dissipated, to stand right before Zaknafane.
You know not even what your share might be, he said to the weapon master.
Enough to pay for a few scrawny halflings, Zaknafane said.
He settled and locked stairs with his friend, then very quietly added,
I played my role and did as demanded.
More than that, I would admit.
Then give me this, my share for the halflings, and show me the way that I can properly set them free.
And then?
Then I return to Menzo Berenson, as pleased with the results of this expedition as is Jarl Axel.
Jarl Axel looked from Zaknafane to Arath Issun.
We split his share?
The rogue laughed and nodded.
I will have from you both, then, a promise that you will not try to steal from me again. You understand my meaning.
Neither did more than grunt, and certainly it was no solid commitment. But it was as good as could be expected in the Underdark, and thus enough for Jarl Axel. Soon after, Jarl Axel, Arath Issun, and three former Zauvir warriors marched again for Menzo Berenson, the mercenary leader carrying the head of Matron Shiva Zauvir in a sack. Jarl Axel caught Arath Issun staring at him more than once, and he recognized the swirl of emotions in his lieutenant's glare. Arath Issun had, until this day, been the unquestioned second-in-command of the small Bregendyearth band, but now he was afraid that Zaknafane might be threatening that position. Jarl Axel smiled. Arath Issun was right, he realized, not only because of Zaknafane's prowess with the blade, and his willingness to finish the mission, even when it looked like Jarl Axel and Arath Issun had been taken off the field. Many in Bregendyearth would perform similarly, though of course none was as good with the blade as Zaknafane. But no, that was not why Jarl Axel now believed that Zaknafane would rise to his side. It was because Zaknafane wouldn't kill the halflings. It was because Zaknafane was possessed of mercy. Would Jarl Axel himself have been brave enough to champion the cause of the helpless little folk? Inwardly, he smiled all the wider. He smiled wider still when Zaknafane walked into the oozing Myconid less than a 10 day after Jarl Axel had delivered the head to Matron Mother Bayenri and shown the three new Bregendyearth soldiers to their quarters. The mercenary leader had been in the tavern every day since his return, waiting and watching. He didn't even try to contain his smile when Zaknafane walked over to join him. Zaknafane grabbed the back of a chair to pull it out from the table, but paused, staring. It took Jarl Axel a few moments to understand the man's confusion, but then he ran his hand over his completely healed and completely bald pate. Not a scar showed, and not a bump, as if the perfectly shaped head had been sculpted by the finest of Menzo Berenson's artists.
It is becoming, is it not? Jarl Axel asked.
Zaknafane snorted, sighed, and shook his head helplessly, but conceded.
Better than that stupid hair, as he took his seat. I can join you,
he added as an afterthought, for he was already sitting.
I saved that very chair for you, Jarl Axel replied with great enthusiasm and his dashing smile.
Zaknafane sighed again.
Though I was not sure you would ever return, Jarl Axel went on. You delivered the halflings?
Into an upper tunnel that led to sunlight, yes.
Jarlaxle looked at him curiously, a wry grin spreading. "Why did you come back?" The question clearly caught Zacnafane off guard, and he sputtered a bit before replying. "Where else might I go?" Jarlaxle just nodded and let it go at that. He was glad the weapon master had returned. He was also a bit disappointed. Jarlaxle's question stayed with Zacnafane all the way back to House Doerden, and indeed, for many days afterward. He had seen the sunlight of the surface, and though it was unpleasant to his eyes, which knew only the dim glows of the Underdark, he could not deny the allure. He had thought of going forward into the open surface world, of leaving Menzo Baranzon far and forever behind. But how might he be received up there, where the elves were plentiful and no race held affinity to the drow? And malice would come for him, he knew, likely with the support of the ruling council, for such heresy could not stand. Zacnafane had come back to Menzo Baranzon unsure of his choice, particularly since he suspected that one excursion to be the best chance of escaping drow society he would ever know. He feared he would regret his decision for the rest of his life. It would prove a valid fear.